You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
This is Julio Rodriguez, and this is the Lookout Landing podcast.
My name is Kate Prusser. I'm the managing editor of Lookout Landing. I am joined today by my podcast co-host, Matthew Roberson. Matthew, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Playoff baseball is in the air. It's really sunny and like crisp out. This is kind of my favorite time of year anyway.
Absolutely.
It's like late September, early October. I think it's the best time to be in the Northwest. So I'm all smiles over here. There's nothing really bringing me down besides, you know, everything else going on in the world. But
sure, on a
micro level, I'm doing all right.
Absolutely. And I will do even more all right if the Twins can pull out a win against the Astros, which I am also sort of monitoring in the background and rooting hard for the boys in powder blue. Are they wearing powder blue? I have no idea.
They're wearing white today, so that'll probably cost them at least a run.
Come on, guys. Come on, guys. Well, it's hard to be anything other than joyous today because we have a guest on the podcast, which is my favorite thing. And this is Mariners minor league pitcher Jack Anderson. You might know him as the Creature. Jack, how are you?
Hey, Kate. I'm good. Thanks for having me on today.
Thanks for being with us. Where are you right now, Jack?
I'm currently in Chicago.
Chicago.
Back home, yeah.
And are you too enjoying this beautiful, crisp fall weather that we are enjoying here in the Northwest?
Oh, you bet. It just got a little nippy the past few days. You know, it's like Matthew said, it's the best time of the year. You know, that fall Christmas.
I really love it. I mean, I would love it more if the Mariners were in the postseason, but that's what you're here to help do. So let's learn a little bit about you. You mentioned you're in Chicago. You grew up in Evanston, Illinois. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was born in Chicago, but did all my growing in Evanston, which is just north of the city.
All your growing. And then you went to Penn State. So what kind of stands out to me is these are like, and were drafted by the Mariners in 2016. What stands out to me is like, these are not exactly baseball hotbeds. I think MLB specifically is doing a lot of really cool outreach right now with the urban academies up in Chicago. I don't know if you know Ed Howard. He was drafted in the first round by the Cubs this year. Pretty cool Chicago kid being drafted by the Chicago home team. But yeah, maybe like not the biggest baseball place. How'd you get started and how'd you get to a Division I school?
Yeah, I think, and speaking on that Howard story, that is super cool because he also played in like the Little League World Series team that went to the championship from Chicago, which the community really got behind. So that was really cool. And it was very cool for him to get drafted. For me personally, I mean, I think I got into it the same way a lot of young boys get into baseball. Like, one of my best friends was playing and I wanted to be better than him at it. So, you know, I got topped on the team the next year. And it just kind of something I fell in love with. I mean, I grew up playing all sorts of sports, but I think baseball was the one that had like the deepest calling to me for sure. And it was something I pursued pretty heavily. And then throughout high school, kind of opportunities started to open the door, or, you know, the door started to open for some cool opportunities in college. And, there were points where I was thinking smaller schools. There were points where I was thinking bigger schools. And then, there was points where I didn't know if it was going to happen at all. And, you know, Penn State kind of came in the fourth quarter and, I took my visit out there and fell completely in love with the campus and I never looked back.
A northern boy at heart.
Definitely. And a city boy for sure, too.
And a city boy. So you were a 23rd round pick when you came out of Penn State. And that is a round that probably isn't going to exist in the MLB draft going forward. To me, I find that a little sad. Like, what do you think for all the people who might not have gotten, will not get drafted, will not get that... They might take a different path to MLB or to pro baseball, but that particular avenue seems to be shutting down. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's a really scary thought. I mean, mm-hmm. You want to talk about the 23rd round and the Mariners specifically. Like, Art Warren was a big leaguer, 23rd round the year before me. Sam Delaplane should be a big leaguer soon. He was the 23rd round behind me. And, I mean, that's a Jordan round, you know, a little special energy right there. It's tough. And Mike Piazza would never play baseball. Like,
right.
You miss out on a ton of incredible stories. And, I mean, but I think that baseball's made their decision of where they want to put their resources and their funding. And I think we're going to just have to learn to go forward from there.
It's really tough because one of the most exciting things about baseball, I think, is those stories about guys. I mean, he wasn't drafted, but, you know, you have Altuve, who got sent home from tryouts, and he just stuck with it. One of the things I really love about baseball is that it does feel like it's open to all kinds of different people and all kinds of different body types and all kinds of different backgrounds. All you have to do is be able to play. And, you know, obviously, we were talking about that kind of murderer's row of you, Art, Delaplane, all drafted outside of what would be the end of the MLB draft going forward. So hopefully teams are pretty confident in their ability to recognize those skill sets now, and we won't lose people like that. Each of the guys that you named, Delaplane has kind of a unique style. We could throw Joey Gerber into this mix, even though he was a slightly higher draft pick, although also a good northern boy like yourself. All of you have like kind of a unique approach to pitching. You have maybe the most unique ones, I think. I've definitely been in the stands at spring training with people who aren't Mariners fans. They're just over for the day. They're just taking in some baseball, and they see you get up and they're like, "What is that?" Which is maybe my favorite reaction. Even if I have my back to the field, I'm like, oh, Anderson must be pitching. They call you the creature, as Pete Woodworth, the current Mariners pitching coach, gave you that nickname. How did you develop the submarine style?
Yeah, I think kind of what you described, the reaction, is some of my favorite parts to doing that entire thing. Like back in high school and college when they didn't really have full scouting reports and didn't know what was coming. Like the second pitch is usually when you get like the oohs and ahs, because the first one, not everyone notices, but then by then everyone's nudging their buddies and telling them, hey, you better check this out on the second one. And then that's when you get some fun reactions. But for me, it all started, I was throwing at a lower arm slot kind of coming up all through Little League and stuff. Like my dad will tell you, like, he thinks my arm slot was getting lower and lower each year. And I had coaches try to correct it at times, but then after my freshman year, we were playing a summer ball game against like a rival high school, and the rival coach, his name's Paul Kaczynski, who I owe a ton to. He came up to me after the game and basically was like, "Hey, I can make you into a Division I pitcher." And I said, "All right, like I'll be there in the winter." And the way I describe it to people is I'm still throwing from like a really low three-quarter arm slot, which I'll still warm up a little bit from. And then it's just bent over and it's like a complete bend at the waist. And we made that transition and it all kind of flowed from there. And I've been doing it for almost 10 years now. It just kind of worked out.
What's the like funniest thing someone has ever said to you about it? Like either a teammate, coach, opposing player, maybe like an umpire. I'm sure someone along the way has like pulled you aside and been like, "Hey kid, like what's going on here?" Like I'm sure there's just some story of someone who was completely in awe of it. And I would love to hear your favorite memory.
Well, I get a lot of softball heckles. Like those are probably like the funniest single lines probably. But the coolest reaction I got was our senior year at Penn State. We had an incredible opportunity where during Thanksgiving break, our team went down to Cuba and we played against the professional teams down in Cuba. And like, obviously I don't know if you've ever seen a Cuban pitcher throw submarine, cause I don't think it exists. And so these, like all of the fans in the stand and the stands were packed, like these were big games for them down there. And yeah, so the reaction to that was kind of like otherworldly. It was like, like a full commotion erupted in the crowd. Like nobody knew how to react or what was going on, and that was really fun and a great memory.
Oh my god, that's awesome.
Yeah, let alone the hitters, so that was great.
So then what was your year like this year? I mean, the COVID shutdown and the aftermath, like you're at spring training and then the next is just kind of over, right? And you don't get invited to the alternate site, unfortunately, which, you know, if we had any decision making, if we had a say in that, you would have been there. But you've basically just kind of been, I mean, I don't know if this is true, but I assume you've been mostly on your own since the shutdown happened. So what have you been doing, and like how do you stay not only like busy but also like stay sharp and make sure you're not like getting worse at baseball?
And how do you get what are you working on? How are you getting better without having coaches looking at you all the time?
For sure. Great question. I mean, so I'm sure you guys heard all the stories from spring training and everything about how it just moved so quickly and everything got shut down. And we got shut down and 2 days later I was on a plane back home. So yeah, I moved back in with my parents, and my brother he's in college. He got sent home from school as well. And he plays club baseball at Illinois. So I was incredibly fortunate to have him around every single day. And like, I got home and I didn't know how long it was. Like, I mean, obviously nobody knew anything. Like, we didn't know how long anything was going to last. I assumed like I was going to be playing baseball at some point to stay ready type of thing. And so we were like on a spring training schedule for a while. Like we were up cooking breakfast, like throwing, we set up a gym in the garage, bought a couple things.
Yeah. Tell us about the alley.
We had the alley athletic club rocking. So we have, I mean, my neighbor, he lives right down the alley. He just started getting into weightlifting and like no one had anything to do. So we're like, it was really important that we were like on a routine. And like my brother and I will still talk about it. Like those times were almost like good. Like we were just like on a routine. We were in shape. Like things were going, they were flowing. Obviously we weren't like setting personal maxes in the garage or anything, but I mean like in the like our barbell is completely like almost at 90 degrees at this point. Like we used it to the fullest for sure, but it was a good way to stay ready, you know, and everything. And yeah, I mean, and that's what I told my brother's name is Matthew, and I told him I was just like, yo, Matt, like I'm gonna need you to like be able to, I'm gonna need you to be on this on me to like stay on this, and we're going to have to do this together. And he was completely down for it. And that's what I was doing for the longest time, was just staying ready, throwing. And like you said, getting better was definitely a task, but like leaving spring training, there were things that I knew I wanted to work on, like specifically different. I wanted to do a couple different things with my slider, to make it more of a versatile weapon against lefties and righties. So we were working on stuff, and he was like, he learned a lot too. Like he was able to like start reading some spins and like understand what I was trying to do with the baseball and be able to give me feedback. Cause I mean, he's catching it constantly. So yeah, I mean, it was a balance of like not overworking your arm, toning it down a bit, then toning it back up, and like really just like figuring out what you're going to do week to week and how we're going to get better.
It must have worn on you, though, is just like these days are going by and you're sticking to this routine. And something I've gotten out of conversations with other guys who were not selected to the alternate site and are trying to stay up is just they just wanted a date, you know, they just wanted a date to look forward to so they could plan things, as opposed to just showing up every day and being like, hope baseball comes back at some point. Hope this isn't all for nothing.
Yeah.
Which is really hard to stay motivated with, right?
Yeah, you know, you're definitely right. And I might have even, like, set dates for myself. And then, but then, like, I mean, you set those, if you set a date mentally and then that date comes and goes and nothing happens, then it's just like the couple of days after that really suck. You know, it's just right. Like, all right, like now we reset, regroup, looking forward at the next date, you know? So it really was just a matter of trying to do things day by day and not looking too far into the future, not like going crazy with everything going on in the news on the day-to-day basis of trying to pick up updates, because like everything was changing so rapidly that there was no point in trusting any reports, because even the reports, the people reporting things didn't know.
Right. Which feels very much like a struggle even us non-athletes had, was just trying to manage that flow of information and not being like, oh my God, Halloween's going to be canceled.
Exactly.
Which I might have been guilty of thinking, going down those paths once or twice. It's tough. I mean, do you feel like the work that the Mariners have done with investing in the mental skills side of things helped you at all through that?
Yeah. No, that's a great question too. That's a good point. I would say yes. And one thing that was really cool is what we were doing was like myself and maybe like 7 or 8 relievers. We were doing a Zoom call every week with Adam Bernero, who's one of the mental skills trainers, whatever the exact title is. And those were really helpful calls for sure. Just like see a group of guys that I'm really comfortable with. Just even like the first half of it, we're just messing around, catching up. And then it was something to dive into every week. You know, we were doing a lot of breathing talks and things like that, et cetera, about the mental skills. And you're right. I think it definitely, being prepared for a day-to-day, like, and like, even, I think even just being a baseball player prepared you more for like living on a day-to-day. Cause that's what the season is. It's like, all right, we're going to like, how am I going to get through this next day? Like how does my body feel? Like, what are we going to do? How am I going to go about it? And like, that's really what it was like when you don't know what the future holds. Like you can really only be present. You can really be only in that day. And I think that did help. And I think that's a good point you made.
You also gave yourself, I think, sort of a gift that maybe you wouldn't have had. I mean, you've been playing baseball every summer since you were 12, 10?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, like 10 for sure.
You know, you've spent the last decade plus spent giving your whole summer away to baseball. And now, all of a sudden, you have a summer off. And you kind of took advantage of that. What'd you do?
I had to, for sure. I mean, yeah, like you said, I recognized that. I was like, all right, who knows when I'll get this opportunity again? Who knows? I've never had it before. So for sure. So the second that I found that I wasn't going to be having a season this year, I picked up my stuff and I moved into the city of Chicago, got a place with a couple of friends. But then right before my brother, yeah, so I was living in the city. I've been living in the city. And then right before my brother went back to school, we were like, we got to do something. We got to go do a trip. And he's an environmental science major, so he's at one with nature in my eyes. And so we shipped out west, and we got in my car. We went to 3 different national parks on a really fun road trip. Just did a ton of hiking. Saw some incredible things. Like it was almost like a trip. Like it was almost like the worst, best thing I've ever done, because it was such a great experience that like returning back, just like everything has not been the same. I was like, just want to be back out there again, man. It was really that special. Like Glacier National Park and Yellowstone are just like 2 of the most incredible places in the world. And we took full advantage of it for sure.
The pictures were spectacular.
Yeah. I mean, it was a little better in person too.
I would imagine.
Jack, we know you don't have much time, but we can't let you go unless we ask about Swings for Stories and this organization that you've been working with recently. Can you explain sort of what that is and then how you got involved and what sort of the goal of the whole thing is?
Yeah, so like I mentioned, when I realized I wasn't going to be having a season this year, I kind of took that energy of all that preparation that my brother and I have been doing and everything, and we wanted to turn it into something super positive with, I've described it as kind of like a perfect storm of everything going on, if you want to call that perfect, but with just like the Black Lives Matter movement becoming so powerful and having such a strong voice, and the shutdown of everything going on with baseball season and me being back home, we put together, and then me having such a strong team behind me at the Beverly Hills Sports Council, who I've just recently partnered up with. We put together a series of events where I was selling at bats at $50 an at bat to really just the general public. The first couple were my close friends, and then we had like baseball alumni from my high school, and then baseball alumni from around the area. So like it was a good wide variety of people who came out and took some at bats, and we recorded the whole thing on Instagram. I had one of my really good friends MC the events, where he was just talking smack the whole time, you know, keeping the people engaged. So we had a ton of fun with that, and all the money is going directly to a nonprofit organization called Young Black and Lit, and they're Evanston based. One of the founders is an Evanston grad, and what they do is they're putting for free. They're giving books to elementary school students with Black protagonists. So the idea is they want the Black kids in the Black community, or really just any community, to have a bookshelf that's more representative of the world they live in. And I think it's a really important factor in the movement going on today, because I think you gain so much knowledge, you do so much learning at such a young age. It's such a pivotal time period of development that if you're not looking at a bookshelf and you're not gaining knowledge from something that's representative of what the world actually looks like, then you're really missing out on opportunity, and you could be shaping dangerous ways of thinking. And so, yeah, we had a ton of fun with the events. We just did our last one last week, and it was an absolute riot. And we hope to raise a little more money, and then we're going to close it out. But we're very happy with what we did with it so far.
So tell us how we can, because this is something I believe in passionately. I taught in the Philadelphia school system for a while and kind of saw firsthand textbooks do not always accurately represent the communities in which they're used. I remember administering a test to a bunch of Philly kids once that was about a little girl who had a horse, and they were like, yeah. What is this? Like, what are these things? They really just imagine you live in inner city Philadelphia and you're forced to read this bunch of stories about a little white girl with a horse. Like, it was not something that I like to say that the Young Black and Lit says, it's affirming of Black lives. And I think that that's something that is really important. They do great work. Tell us how our listeners can support your work with this great organization.
Yeah, absolutely. So our pledge page is going to be open probably till the end of the week, maybe into next week, because the events are over. But the pledge page is called, it's pledge it, so pledgeit.org/Jack Anderson, which is my name, jackanderson. And so the way we were doing it before is there was opportunities to like donate per strikeout throughout the entirety of the events. So you can just donate any flat fee you want that goes straight to Young Black and Lit, and 100% of everything's going to be going to them. So if anyone out there is listening to this and they want to support a great cause with a powerful movement behind it, then please feel free to donate. Go to the pledge page, get something in there, and any amount helps. And it really is just putting books in kids' hands and doing some good in the world.
They can also go off of your Instagram page, right?
Sure. That's an easy way to find it.
What's your Instagram handle again?
So my Instagram is going to be the_Jandyman. It's like Candyman, but with a J.
I get it.
Yeah, I gotta say, I like the creature a little bit better.
Yeah, I'm not mad at that either.
And we're not. Your season is not done necessarily, because you're headed down to Arizona here pretty soon, right? You're headed to the, I'm calling it the Fake Fall League. It's in Strux, but technically, but it's sort of the top prospects from the organization, including people who are not invited to the alternate training site. You're going to be playing alongside kids from the DSL who've never played stateside. You're going to be playing with guys who have just a few innings in the AZL, who got drafted pretty recently, like Jared Bayless, someone we've had on the pod, really interesting guy. You're going to be playing with guys who've never thrown a professional pitch because they were injured, like Michael Limoncello and Levi Stout. So how do you envision your role as one of the more experienced players there? Are you going to be kind of like a camp counselor to these players who have never who don't have as much experience as you do?
You kind of gave me a lot more information than I had previously. So this is a little bit of news to me. But yeah, I am taking off tomorrow to get out there. Oh, I'm personally super excited to get to pitch some competitive at-bats and not just strike out my friends for the past few weeks, you know? So I'm excited, like, no matter if they're DSL or AZL guys, I'm sure they're going to be better competition than those guys were. So I'm excited. I'm ecstatic to go out there and play some baseball and have the cameras on you and or the computers and stuff and like just continue to get better and prepare for next year. And hope, I mean, if it's a younger crew out there, I'm excited to meet a ton of new guys, which is always one of my favorite aspects of doing these type of Mariner camps. You get introduced to a ton of really cool kids. And so I'm excited to meet them. I'm excited. And then, you know, I'm going to go about my business and we're going to work hard. And I hope that there's going to be a lot of other people out there who are going to share the same passion as myself. And I think that we're going to all be able to get after it together. It's going to be a ton of fun.
Yeah, so you finally have a date.
At the time we're recording this, too, we should mention the roster was released 2 hours ago. So it's totally understandable that Jack maybe hadn't seen it and we broke the news to him. But yeah, Julio Rodriguez will be there. Taylor Trammell, some 2020 draftees, too, like Emerson Hancock, Caden Polkovich. So it should be a fun group, and I'm excited that you'll be a part of it as well, Jack. I hope that we're able to watch it here in Seattle. There's hopefully some sort of live stream element.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Yeah, I'm definitely excited about it for sure.
Great. Well, it's really exciting to have some form of baseball coming back, and then, you know, it'll just be a short layoff, and then it'll be time for spring training again. Time for you to come out and do your thing. But I think you've done really an inspiring job of making your off time count, not just for you personally, but also using it to do some good in the world. And I just really appreciate that. Really proud to call you part of the organization, Jack.
Thank you very much. That means a ton. I really appreciate you guys taking the time to amplify what we're doing, because I really do think it means a lot. And I agree with everything you're standing for.
Thank you so much. Thank you guys for listening to this. Thank you, Jack Anderson, for making the time. For Matthew Roberson, I'm Kate Prusser. This was the Lookout Landing Podcast. We will talk to you next time.
Bye. Thank you so much to Jack Anderson for joining the show. That was a great conversation. And please, if you have the ability and the means to, consider donating to what Swings for Stories and Young Black and Lit, the things that he mentioned. Supports a really good cause. But Jack is gone. He has a life to live. He has to apparently get on a plane to go to Arizona. So we brought in our local correspondent, John Troopin, to handle the rest of this. John, how's it going, man?
We're doing okay. Yeah, less exciting than going to fall instructional development league, but watching baseball for like 14 hours straight the next couple days. So
yeah, we got the March Madness schedule. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, John was. We would like to solicit pity for John, who was in a car accident, but is fine. Yes, you're fine.
True. Yes, it's true. And as Mr. Foss, my driver's ed teacher, once told me, there's no such thing as an accident, only collisions. Yep. An accident implies it was unavoidable by decision making, and that's not the case. Someone could have made a better decision, apparently. all good. Just shoulders does not feel particularly solid, but all parties involved are overall okay. People
is
fine,
is this your so. Pitch? This isn't your pitching shoulder. Is
sure
it?
Is. I
oh,
wish it
no.
wasn't. I wish it was not, for multiple reasons. I wish I was left-handed, because then me throwing like 73 most of my career would have been viewed much more favorably by really everyone. But it is not feeling great in the old pitching zone, but. Thankfully got a little off season to rehab, timed it out nicely. So should be ready for spring training.
Yeah. maybe you could learn something too from watching this fake fall league, because there are some names on this list, guys that I think are very aspirational for a young developing pitcher. I don't know if you guys have a favorite, or when you saw this list that was released this morning, if you kind of perked up when you saw a name or two, but Sam Carlson is going to be pitching. That is truly unbelievable. It's, I think, for the casual fan, very easy to straight up forget about him because we have not seen him do much of anything. So he's the one where when I saw him, I was like, okay, like we got a little bit for everyone here. There's also like the 2020 draft class, like Emerson Hancock will be there, and Polkovich, and someone else who I'm forgetting right now, Tyler Keenan. But I like this team. I think it'll be fun to watch. I pray to my preferred deity that they'll actually stream it in some way, because I also want to see Jonathan Classe, who I know Kate has been really, really, really excited about for some time now. And then also Taylor Trammell will be there. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And I'm curious what you guys thought when you first saw the list, and if you have some sleepers that you know more about than I do.
I'm really excited to see all of these guys, because a lot of them are not guys who were at the alternate training site. So, and a lot of them are guys who have not thrown or played stateside, like Nathaniel Garavitos is from the DSL. Obviously, Class A, who's I was excited about, Noel V. Marte, who was at the alternate training site but hasn't played in any stateside ball. So some exciting things from the very lowest levels. Mm-hmm. I wonder how that's going to work with guys like Wyatt Mills and Jack Anderson, who've been in Double A and are, I thought, were kind of going to get looks for the actual big league club this year. It's very weird to me. Hopefully those guys can kind of be like camp counselors to a lot of these guys who haven't played at all. I'm really excited to see Alberto Rodriguez, who was acquired from the Blue Jays in the Taiwan Walker trade. He is a very solidly built little-ish guy who can play center field, and he's best friends with Noel V. Marte. He was thrilled to be traded to the Mariners. They grew up together. They consider themselves like brothers, so I'm excited to see what kind of that duo can do.
Yeah, I think those are a great group there. I'll add, particularly from the especially young guys, because, yeah, as you said, Kate, like, I'm really curious. They're this group, it's going to be them, the Padres, and then the surprise Arizona teams in the
which
Rangers,
is the Royals and the Rangers.
Yeah. So that group is just going to play for 6 weeks basically against one another. And you know, you got guys like Christian Cardozo and Jose Corniel who have not pitched, I don't believe. Did Cardozo pitch last year in the DSL? I can't
Cardozo
remember.
Cardozo did not pitch.
Yeah,
no, I don't think so.
So neither, you know, it's some of the most potentially high ceiling guys in the system, but like literally 17 and 18 years old. Same thing with George Feliz, who turned 18 6 days ago, I think. Something like that when I was writing up the blurb, and like has not
Milcar Perez.
Yeah. So like, yeah. So, I mean, it is several players who, not only is it, they're not just like, oh, you were just drafted and haven't played, like Emerson Hancock or, you know, or Michael Limoncelli and, you know, Levi Stout, who are like, oh, well, you were drafted, but then you had an injury and you're now getting back. It's like, you would maybe not even have played this year. Like, George Feliz, I think, would have had his first DSL summer this year. And, like, Jonathan Classe is super young, and he's still like over a year ahead of where Feliz would be. So it is a really like wide range of guys. Like Taylor Trammell has had 2 years in Double A, like or parts of 2 years in Double A. Like this would have been probably his third year in Double A. George Feliz has never played a professional baseball game. Like that is the same outfield. Like that's Wild, you know. So I'm really curious, and I don't know if we'll get media coverage, but it should be pretty neat.
Oh, and similar to Alberto Rodriguez, we also get Matt Brash, who was acquired in the Taylor Williams trade from the Padres, who we've seen none of.
Yeah.
Like, Zero was not at the alternate training site, or at least was not reported on. So, again, like you, really hoping that there are some glimpses here and there. Apparently, there will be no media allowed. So anything we get will be from the team, which is kind of a bummer.
Let me in.
I'm curious how that's going to work, because I know scouts are allowed, but it's got to be pro scouts. So I don't know how exactly that, like, whether it's specifically employees or what. But yeah, it's probably going to be tough to get any non-slanted info, unfortunately. But we'll see.
I'm kind of imagining like a Masked Singer vibe, where like no one really knows who any of the people are, and they have to like reveal themselves as the fall unfolds. I've also never seen that show, so I'm not really sure how it works. But the general gist, I feel like, is who is this person? Ah, oh, this person's great. Hooray. So that's kind of what I'm envisioning with this fake fall league, as we've decided to call it.
I was kind of at the point with these guys where I could recognize guys from, like just pick them out, like, oh, that's Wyatt Mills, oh, that's Dyson Arias, like, that's Jack Anderson, who's the easiest one to pick out, right, because of the wild angle he pitches at. But I'm looking at this list, and, like, I don't know that I could recognize more than a third of these guys in the field.
Yeah, legit, that is, I fully agree. Like, looking at it, it's like, yeah, I know, like, most of those outfielders, and just if, like, they were all doing outfield drills by, like, process of elimination, I could figure out everyone. But, like, that pitching staff.
Find the biggest one, that's Julio.
Yeah.
Find the smallest one, that's Class A.
Right.
And then just arrange everyone else in between.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that pitching staff is going to be very interesting. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting, but it's hard. It's frustrating because it is very tantalizing, and yet I fear we're not going to get a ton of real info.
I agree. Also, though, we have to remember, like, it is three other organizations they're playing with. So I'm going to be looking at Rangers. I'm going to be looking at the Royals feeds. I'm going to be looking at the Padres and see if any of them, and if maybe we can, like, pick out something in the background.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the other big news of the week, I guess, is Jerry Dipoto got in front of a microphone and basically said, we expect this team to contend in 2021, and we're going to try to do that basically with this roster we saw this year plus bullpen guys. And Jerry Dipoto, with Seattle at least, does not have a great track record of signing free agent relievers. We all remember Mark Zepchinski, perhaps a Juan Nicasio. Who else in there? Colome was good. That was a trade, I guess. How do we get
Steve
Nick Vincent?
Cishek.
Was Vincent a free agent, or was that a trade?
But I mean, Cishek? It was like a dollar. Vincent.
For Nicky V.
Yeah,
Nicky V was like a waiver. I don't count anything that was like a waiver wire pickup. I count what they paid cash money for, and what they've paid cash money for in the name of bolstering the bullpen when they were in their contention window has been notably Mark Zepchinski, Hunter Strickland,
Juan Nicasio.
And I would say 0-for-3 on those.
Cishek is really the only, like, net positive they've gotten in free agency in that way. Yeah. It's been pretty grim, especially since what was it? It came out that, like, Brian Shaw was, like, someone they were heavily targeting, because the Rockies outbid them, they ended up going for Nicasio. So it's
so
like,
bad.
Oof.
Yeah, they could have looked even worse.
Yeah. So
this is not, I don't want I don't want Jerry in charge of this. I don't think that these are, this is a, yeah, a track record that I do not, unless we're working with a very lots better set of stats right now. And I mean, with the waiver wire pickups, they've had a lot of success, I think, in pulling guys off the scrap heap from organizations that don't develop super well. But also, those are so low cost that they always are going to look good if they turn into even halfway decent players, you know? Yeah, of course, Taylor Williams looks like a success story. Like, he was on the scrap heap. Like, Austin Adams, same thing. So I would almost rather see them continue to churn the waiver wire than go out and spend actual capital on someone who, track record is not great.
Yeah, and when you look at the free agents that are relievers coming up, there's really not a whole lot of sexy options. Most of them are old. Like, Joaquin Soria is 37. Like, the best one, just talent-wise, is probably Liam Hendricks. He's 32, and I think he would be a nice addition, but also, like, you just never know. Like, anything could happen with relievers of this age, especially. Like, I'm just so nervous about him trying to do any of this that I would almost rather him just go all in on the people we have in-house, like Joey Gerber, Wyatt Mills, Jack Anderson, you're the bullpen, Delaplane, get up here. Like, that to me at least is like showing faith in your own decision-making rather than like trying to double down and being like, yes, Shane Green will fix everything. You know what I mean?
A sentence said by no one ever. Yeah. I just want Liam Hendricks so you can keep doing your Australian accent.
That is a huge part of it, I will admit. I will admit. Kirby Yates is also going to be available. He's pretty good. But it's just, I don't know. I feel like anyone who comes to the Mariners, and this is also like a very tired thing, but it's kind of the truth. At least it's how I feel. Like, when people come to the Mariners as free agents in advanced age, not a lot of great success. I mean, Cruz and Cano are the only ones, and they're cyborgs. So I just don't know. I don't feel great about Jerry, like, coming out and saying this too. Like, he clearly wanted people to know this was happening. He like went on the record as saying, we're gonna have a pretty good team and we're gonna try to just add to it with relievers. He also said, for what it's worth, that Mitch Haniger will be the opening day right fielder, and he believes Kelnick, Gilbert, and Cal Raleigh will be up at some point. Among other things, he said six man rotation is probably here to stay. And that's really it in terms of like clickbait kind of stuff. I guess the poll quote here is, our goal will be to go out there and contend for a playoff spot. And I don't think that's an unrealistic goal. I don't think he's wrong, especially if they keep the expanded playoffs. But I don't know. It just feels like he is maybe doing the classic like PR spin doctor thing where he's like, this roster we got here is perfect. Like, I would much rather if he was like, acknowledge the fact that there's going to be some more work to be done rather than just saying, oh yeah, the work is like 90% complete.
I think that the challenge they're running into, right, is, and I'm working on an article on this, but they're basically in a situation where most of their position player spots are either filled by veterans who you're pretty sure are good. Like, that's Kyle Seager, that's Mitch Haniger, that's Tom Murphy, maybe, I guess. And then young guys or full prospects who you need to see like still play every day to figure out if they're somebody or not. You know, Kyle Lewis, J.P. Crawford, whoever's going to play second base, and Evan White. So like the spots where they could most strongly upgrade, and that's the same in the rotation, right? Marco, Yusei, Kikuchi, Justice Sheffield, and then like, do you keep going to Justin Dunn? Do you keep going to Nick Margavichus? Like, what are you doing there? But like, you could make a huge upgrade there, but then you are not going to get to see whether what you have internally could perform reasonably well there. So the bullpen was horrific this year. That is the place they could most certainly upgrade, but it's also not a great place to put a bunch of money.
Yeah, and I don't appreciate like the distraction element. Like, please don't ask me about signing JT Realmuto. Like, please don't ask me about signing DJ LeMahieu. Like, look at this bullpen instead. Here's where it almost feels like an attempt to manage fans' expectations so people don't get pissed that they're not spending money. I would have way more appreciated an honest, like, look, we're still probably a year out of really legitimately contending. We did a lot better this year than we expected or we were projected to, and I hope that that funnels into next year. But you cannot ignore the fact, like, you didn't call up Logan Gilbert. You didn't call up Jared Kelnick. Like, those guys are still going to have an adjustment period whenever they do get called up. Mm. Evan White was... there were moments of grace and beauty, and there were moments that were completely a disaster for him. Like, he's not going to figure this all out in one off season. He's still developing, and he has had to do it at the major league level. And that's, you know, no, I wasn't expecting that much more from him, but just be honest about where we are. Like, the yeah. team we have this year, you know, there were a few games that were won by Jose Marmolejos, who is probably not going to be part of your next great team. There were people in Tacoma who will be part of your next great team who weren't there. Be honest with the fans. We've come this far. Like, I don't mind hearing this next year is going to be another building year for us, and then we plan to contend after that. Don't lie to me.
Right. That's what I was trying to say. You put it in a much better package. But yeah, like, he has to know that, like, they're still not there yet, and he's trying to sell us on this dream that, like, 2021. Remember when I said 2021 2 years ago? We're still sticking to that. And it's like, we can wait another year. We've been waiting our whole fucking life, Jerry. Like, it's not, one more year is not going to change anything for me.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
So I will say I actually appreciated it a bit, because I think it's that the degree of couching is pretty heavy, even in this sort of optimistic statement. Like, we expect to be able to compete for a playoff spot in a season where we've heard Rob Manfred say it's either going to be 12 or 14 playoff spots next year. It's not going to be 16, so, like, it's not going to be quite as anything goes as this year, but, like, instead of needing, like, on average, like, 88 to 90 wins, it's going to be somewhere between, like, 84 to 87 wins is what you're I think on an average year you would need to be the sixth or seventh best team in a league. And, you know, that doesn't mean the Mariners are going to build a team that on day one looks like it's a 87 win team, but it does mean, like, I think you can, you know, our last time that we saw the Mariners contending, they were a team that had to put it, they had to be starting from a higher bar, because the more likely thing was that they were going to lose quality over a year, because so much of where they were getting their production from was older players, right? This year, and going forward, like, they have so many young guys that if you start with a lower baseline, I think there's more reasonable optimism that you will overachieve because you have guys improving and getting more comfortable. So, you know, if they come out next year and they've got a club that looks like it's like a 75 to 80 win team, or maybe a little bit better, you know, maybe like 77 to 81 win team, I feel like that's, you know, it's not like, oh yeah, we're going for it big, but it is like, okay, this is a team that, you know, if you do see Evan White step forward, if you do see, you know, another pitcher step forward, if you do see, you know, Kelnick come up in May and just start tearing the cover off the ball, hey, whoops, we're right there in it, like that, and that I that would feel good enough for me as like you're still giving your young guys opportunities, but you're also like putting some more proof out there of like this is working, we're making steps in the right direction, like that.
I'll also say, like, looking around at the AL West, I think the Rangers have to have admitted by now that their skinny rebuild is a fail. Yeah. They are they blew this year. So I think that you're going to see them go into hardcore reset mode. I'm betting a lot of them, they trade what they can over the offseason and start rebuilding. You have the Astros, definitely, I think. And you could say, like, oh, they had injuries. But they're going to be Verlanderless. They're going to have a very old Zach Greinke. A very consistently hurt, it seems, Lance McCullers.
Mm-hmm. Just a rotation across the board, yeah.
Yeah, and it's and they've got a pretty emptied out farm system. I think you're definitely seeing the beginning of the Astros being on that slide down. And then the Angels, who knows? Like, I'm assuming they're going to hire Dave Dombrowski, who will come in, bomb out the farm system, sign a bunch of expensive guys. I mean, that's a realistic threat. They're also the Angels, and I feel like every year I say they're a realistic threat, and every year they fuck it up in some way. Mm-hmm. So who knows? And then you have Oakland, which I never know what exactly to make of Oakland. Like, they have a lot of young, fun guys, and they have a lot of guys who are going to be coming due to get paid pretty soon. So
They're losing Marcus Semien, most likely. Hard to see them, you know, signing him for what he's worth. Like, their young pitching is, I think, the most threatening part of their sort of rebuild. And, like, A.J. Puck does not seem like he's able to stay healthy. No. So, you know, Sean Murphy looks very solid, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, Franklin Barreto, no. Like, they already
I'm not a big believer in Mateo.
Yeah, they ditched Mateo, right? They traded him to the Padres. I mean, yeah, they are, you know, they absolutely, I mean, Matt Chapman will be back.
Who's going to play shortstop for them then?
Yep, great question. Chad Pinder, maybe. No. I don't know. You know, I mean, like, they're still going to be good, but, like, they are, I absolutely, like, not a bulletproof. You know, they're not, I think, the 97-win team that they have been the past few years, and I think that their vulnerabilities are going to continue to crop up. So I think you may see a more like 2015-2016 kind of AL, where it's a lot more of an actual like middle class, as opposed to the last few years where it was like the fifth best team won 97 games, and then the sixth best team was the Mariners, and then the next, like, everyone else was under 500. Like, I think we'll have a little bit more like interesting in the middle kind of stuff, because you got Cleveland coming down, you got Toronto coming up, you got Detroit a little bit coming up. Like, it's going to be neat, and I think the Mariners can be right in the thick of that, and I would be happy with that.
I just got really distracted. I thought that Chad Pinder was Australian. He's from Virginia. This is on me. I really thought that he was an Australian man. He seems very Australian to me. Maybe it's just because his name is like Chad Pinder. Like, you can say it.
Pinder.
It's real easy to say in that accent. Plays for Oakland, but... Yeah. Yeah, wow. Okay.
Oakland,
so
Auckland, you know.
My whole worldview has been shaken by this. But his name is Chadwick, which makes a lot of sense. Just, he looks like a Chadwick. But not from Australia, from Richmond, Virginia.
That means there are two Chadwicks, yeah, because there's also Chadwick Trump with the Giants, right?
Chadwick Trump.
Chadwick Trump, yes, yeah. I know. The fun thing about following the minor leagues is you get to know all the fun names before they come up, and then everyone's freaking out about them, and you're like, pfft. Ugh, that's so 2 years ago, buddy.
Yeah, get ready for Jazz Chisholm in the playoffs.
Yeah, baby.
Let's go to some listener questions. They're all pretty in line with what we've been talking about, but I want to give these people a shout-out, especially Declan Andrews. We'll go with him first. What's up, Declan? He said, we already have a stock of young pitching. What are the odds of someone like Dunn being moved to the bullpen and letting a more notable starter to fill his rotation spot rather than leaving him in the rotation and picking up relievers? So essentially, do you see the Mariners taking a swing on adding a free agent or a trade piece to the rotation and moving Dunn to the bullpen, or letting him go in the rotation, figuring out what he needs to do to stick. I have said on previous ones that I think that while it's kind of like admitting failure to some degree, I think done to the bullpen makes a lot of sense. He's done it before, which we've talked about as well, both in college and in the minors. Obviously, if he has his druthers and if I could, you know, pick my ideal situation for Justin Dunn, it's like a 3 or 4 starter. But I don't know. This year made me question that. So I will say that I would be totally okay with him being moved to the bullpen and them trying to get a little more of an established dude to take his spot. But if, I mean, it's kind of a, I'm not upset either way, because if they don't do that and leave him in the rotation, then it's like, okay, we have faith in this guy. We think he can be something. And as much as people might want to poo-poo this, I think the Mariners pitching development is the one thing they can hang their hat on. So like, if they need to be patient and wait another year for him to fully develop into a starter, at least I can say I have a little bit of trust in them to do that. What do y'all think?
I agree wholeheartedly. I would rather see them go try and sign a decent to very solid starting pitcher, as opposed to trying to pepper throughout the bullpen with free agent signings. It's not like there's an incredible starting pitcher group out there, but there are enough guys who are interesting. You know, there's Taiwan Walker, James Paxton, you know, Alex Wood, even
Trevor Bauer.
Yeah, I mean, there's Trevor Bauer. But Trevor Bauer, Trevor Bauer's not going to sign a multi-year deal, so I don't think that's...
Oh, that's right. It's one of his rules. He made that rule for himself.
Yeah, which is like, I think people keep forgetting that, and it's like, there's not really much point in signing Trevor Bauer if he is insisted he will be able to be, I believe, hit in the nuts, kicked in the nuts as hard as possible, or hit with a... Or no, it's go into a batting cage and like take a fastball in the nuts, like... Happy Gilmore style, I think. So,
sure.
You know, which frankly could set him back in his pitching quality. So, not a great investment in my estimation there. But yeah, there's enough guys out there who are interesting, even Kevin Gausman or, you know, Robbie Ray. So I would rather see that, and then you not only that, you're building depth, like you have Dunn. If someone gets hurt, oh great, Justin Dunn, get right back in there and keep, you know, give yourself a chance to prove yourself. So.
Yeah, Kate? The Erasmo Ramirez role.
Yeah.
I'm willing to put some blind faith into the organization, which I'm not always willing to do, but I assume that they have metrics and stuff that says that Justin Dunn has the possibility still to be a starting pitcher. Otherwise, I think they would have started that move on him. He's had one very abbreviated season at the major league level. I don't think hardly anyone looks great in their first year. Like, you just have to learn how to pitch to that league. A lot of the struggles that I saw him having at AA kind of persisted. He still needs a reliable out pitch. He needs to work on the command. I'm not willing to give up on that yet. But I do think, like, I like the idea of signing Taiwan Walker specifically, who I think wants to come back, and they could get pretty cheaply on maybe a 2-year deal. I would like that, and then you give Dunn some space to work on whatever when he's got some time, when there's a real minor league season. I definitely like that plan more than signing a bunch of relievers who I'll probably hate. But first and foremost, like, I think you've invested this time in this player, like, you gotta stick with them and see them through. And so I am the Justin Dunn apologist on the staff, and I wear that mantle proudly. I will prove all of you wrong someday.
Okay, let's do these next ones kind of quickly, because we got some good questions and I want to get to as many as possible. Okay. One from Brian at a player to be named later. There's such a glut of starting pitching in the minors for the M's. Is there any chance one of them is converted to a reliever? Who is the likeliest candidate? This one is right up y'all's alley.
Juan Ten is the first one that jumps to mind, which is admittedly sort of sizist of me, but he is a smaller guy who really has rocketed his velocity up in shorter outings. So he's one. I don't know that he's at the top of, you know, that pitching list, but he's absolutely someone who I could see that for. Sam Carlson's another one, just because there's so much less time for him to get his full play, you know, development in. I could see them trying to sort of work him in as a reliever to try and accelerate his development.
Yeah, none of the other big ones jump out at me. I mean, I think Isaiah Campbell, George Kirby, Brandon Williamson might be an interesting one. I just think he's got a lot of potential, but in short stints, again, he's another one whose fastball is playing up. He's got that deadly, deadly curveball. Yeah. I see a potential high leverage reliever in there if he, but I mean, his upside is so big as a starter.
Yeah.
I
don't see why there's no reason to rush him until he doesn't. No.
And again, I would like to remind, as we're talking about this, looking to the outside to sign bullpen help, they have Johan Ramirez, Andres Munoz, and Gerson Bautista, all of whom are flamethrowers, all of whom who have their own issues. But any of those guys, if one of those guys hits, there's your closer. So 1 in 3, I think those are pretty good odds.
And my boy Kendall Graveman, let's not forget.
Kendall Graveman, that's right. Yeah. Who will come back, right? We're pretty sure he'll come back. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Ben J. Brown on Twitter wants to know if Delaplane and Warren will be up. Hold on. Let me read his whole question. Assuming they sign relievers, what does the pen look like in 2021? Are Delaplane and Warren coming up? I feel like if they sign big league ready relievers, one of those guys is getting the short end of the stick. And history tells us it'll probably be Art Warren. They have not really given him a lot of chances to spread his wings. I think Delaplane, I could see them doing the, see what you got kind of thing, where he's up for, 5 games, and if it's bad, they'll send him back down, and if it's good, he sticks around. But I see them, from what they've done in the past, being more willing to do that than giving Art Warren another shot, which is a bummer, but I think it might be the truth here.
I've heard that Delaplane's velocity was not where it had been. It was more in the high 80s than in the low 90s, so I think that might have had something to do with him not coming up this year, because they definitely were giving him looks in spring training. And, you know, it wasn't going great. He didn't seem to have hit his stride, or maybe there's some kind of nagging injury. I think he did have a triceps issue at some point in his career.
Yeah.
So that could be that. Art Warren, I think they're just trying to conserve the bullets in his shoulder. Honestly, they're only... they think so many of them. He's had a lot of shoulder problems throughout his career. Why waste him in a season where, they're not going anywhere? So I do expect we see Warren next year at some point, just for a see what he's got kind of thing.
Fair enough. All right, let's talk playoffs. The playoffs have begun. We are recording this on the first day of the 2020 postseason. And like John said, there's about 14 hours of baseball on today. What are y'all thinking? Do you is it going to be chalk, or do you think we're going to see more chaos with the different format? Because I feel like the 3-game series to start things off, really heightens that anything can happen sort of idea that we always talk about in the playoffs. But if you get a great pitching performance from your game one starter, then the other team has to win 2 games in a row, and that's pretty difficult to do. So I think we're going to see some craziness. I personally would love the Brewers to beat the Dodgers. I'm not confident in that, but that's the one that I'm probably the most rooting for outside of Houston and Oakland losing. So I guess my question, and we've written an article about this that you can check out on the site, where we all kind of picked who we think will win versus who we want to win in the first round series. But I want to know what you guys are thinking about just the general state of playoff baseball in 2020 and what you think it's going to look like. Because also there's no days off either. It's going to be a sprint to the finish.
Do you want us to start with upsets? Because I have an upset pick.
Yeah, hit me with your upset.
My upset pick is the Marlins knocking off the Cubs, because I think the Cubs have been inconsistent. And the Marlins seem to have some kind of weird devil magic that they're just... this whole season, even though they had to play literally a week's worth of their games with guys who had never played above A level ball, and somehow they hung on there tooth and nail. So go, and also I don't like the Cubs, so go Marlins.
I think you're onto something, though. They do have that stench of, like, the team that just gets really hot at the right time, yeah. You know, like 07 Rockies, last year Nationals, like that sort of thing, where if you're playing well, like, that's probably more, maybe not more important, but as important as talent at this time of year. Like, how are you playing today is, like, the most important thing on the whole fucking system.
And the Cubs feel like, I mean, their stars, that's been well documented, are not performing. There's a lot of questions about whether... who's going to be around. Chris Bryant said swears in an interview. I mean, the general vibe seems off there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Chris Bryant said, I don't give a shit about, like, what his contract looks like or what he's doing next year. I don't know what the context was, but I saw him say,
it was about
I don't
give a shit. Yeah, he was getting, people are getting, he's getting upset about people, you know, criticizing him for performing poorly.
Ah, John, what are your thoughts on the playoffs? Do you have an upset or a team that you're hitching your wagon to?
Well, I don't know that it's as bold, and especially as I'm watching the White Sox up 3-0, but it would have been the White Sox over the A's, which I don't think is that wild of a call since
I still think that's kind of bold since the A's, like, trounced the AL West.
It's true. Yeah, I mean,
and the White Sox fell off hard towards the end. So I still think that's a hot take.
Yeah, well, I mean, that is my call then. I love the fucking the debate about the A's saying we're going to start our young lefty Jesus Luzardo, who I adore, but and the White Sox being like, y'all are making a grievous error. We are death to lefties, and immediately 14-0 and hitting 14-0 against left-handed pitchers. Yeah. Yep, and a 3-0 lead through six. So. Looking solid there. Beyond that, I think anything could happen. I would be pretty upset if the Dodgers lost to the Brewers. Not because like only because like I want to see the Dodgers play more. I would like to see the if the Dodgers make it deep and lose, that's fine. But like. I would be a little bit more upset if the team that won like 43 games in the 60 game season just got sort of like bounced in some weird, like ill-conceived, barely any advantage for being good in the regular season format. So that's my only thing there. And I hope we get a little bit more of a, like, you get a bye or you get some sort of better, you know, reward for being really good in the regular season format going forward.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think my ideal Final Four, now that I'm looking at the bracket, would be Tampa versus Minnesota for the AL and then the Padres versus the Braves, because I'm completely smitten by Ronald Acuna. When he hit that ball 495 feet and the camera couldn't even find it, I was like, this is my guy. I'm in for the rest of his career. So, and seeing him play Tatis would just be so much fun. And I think I mentioned this too in my in the postseason article we wrote, but the Braves not having fans to do the tomahawk chop is going to be massive in terms of watchability, yeah. Because there's obviously like the racial connotations, which are bad, but just sonically it also sucks to listen to. Yeah, so yeah. I'm excited to not have to deal with any of that this year and just watch the Braves conflict free.
That is fantastic. I might think that Cincinnati might have a chance if they can hang in there long enough to get to Atlanta's bullpen, which is absolutely execrable. Like, I think the only reason it didn't get more attention is because the Phillies bullpen in the same division was so much worse. I mean, like, literally,
and there's always the Mets, baby.
Oh yeah, also that. I mean, that was just, the AL East was a disaster of bullpens. I couldn't believe that they didn't like even the Pirates had some better bullpen guys than, ugh, it was just a mess, a hot mess. So, I mean, I would not put it past, in the tradition of Atlanta teams, the Braves going up big and then blowing a 27-3 lead at the end because of their bullpen.
That is in play. You have to remember the cities that each of these teams represent and the curses that come with them. So that is a good point. I think Cincinnati, though, does have, I mean, if you get Castillo Bauer 1-2, like, you could just win that series right off the bat.
Yeah. No, they are nasty. And I don't know if they have like a full enough team, but it really, like, their pitching is outrageous. And Sonny Gray too. Like, Sonny Gray has been unbelievable too.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, I'm psyched. I am psyched to watch almost all of these games, and like the shitty teams that made it in, like, are the Brewers and the Astros, and I am psyched to root against the Astros. So all of it, I am enthusiastic for.
I like it from a, just give me all of the baseball at once. And I think this could also help me maybe come around on expanded playoffs. I think 12 is probably the sweet spot. I don't know if we need this format every single year, but it'll be fun. I'm like you said, I am psyched to watch it. And I hope that the rest of you all as well, because this was never a guarantee. So we made it to the playoffs. There will be a champion at some point. Someone will get the weird looking trophy in an empty stadium, but at least it's better than the alternative. So enjoy it while we can. And then hopefully, as I've been saying all year, next season we'll be back to somewhat of a normal situation. But I think that's it. I have to go get my hair cut, which is very exciting. One of the little treats of the pandemic, for sure. And we'll talk to you later. Hopefully we'll have some more guests. We're going to try to reach out to more high-profile, stunning, show-stopping people to grace these airwaves. But until then, enjoy the postseason, y'all, and take care of yourselves.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Watch them all, stand alive, folks, like some.